The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, good morning. The Buddha gave a lot of instructions on meditation practice. But if we try to understand what meditation he himself did, he only, as far as I know, only indicated in one place or in one kind of context for what he did. And that is, a few times he went into the woods to spend a few months on retreat by himself. And he announced on his departure for the woods, he said, "If anyone asks what I'm doing, you can tell them that I'm doing mindfulness of breathing." And so mindfulness of breathing, it seems to be one of the core practices that the Buddha practiced. It's also one of the core practices that's taught in many different schools of Buddhism and down through the centuries. It's probably the most continuously practiced meditation technique in Buddhism, practicing on the breathing. And it's been said that all of Buddhism can unfold by just paying attention to your breathing. It's that significant, that powerful. A place where we get a sense of this Buddha's emphasis on meditation and breathing is a little story of the Buddha's teachings to his own son. And we think his son was about 13 or 14, a young teen, and he was now living with his father, the Buddha, as a kind of living a monastic life. But it seems like he hadn't really received any instructions in meditation yet, maybe because he wasn't in ninth grade yet. The story begins with the Buddha and his son going off for alms, meaning alms food, when a Buddhist monastic doesn't eat unless it's offered to them each day. So they were going into town to see if anybody would offer them food to eat for that day. And they were walking into town, and the story just says that the Buddha turned to his son and said something like, it's not appropriate to be concerned with your looks. It's not appropriate to have your looks or your appearance take it as yourself or something. And this little statement was enough for the son to feel like, okay, I can't go along now. I have to go back to camp. I have to go back to the place where they were living in the woods. So it seems like he felt chastised or felt kind of reprimanded. And so the usual understanding is that because they were walking together and the son looked like a little bit like his father, and his father was the great teacher, he was feeling kind of proud, a little bit conceited or vain about his own good looks. So, and his father picked up, you know, like, this guy is, you know, flaunting it somehow during the alms rounds, going for alms, which is not appropriate. So he went back to camp and sat there, and maybe he was looking a little unhappy. Certainly he wasn't getting food that day. And so one of the Buddha's main disciples, Sariputta, said to him, "When the Buddha comes back, you should ask him for instructions in meditation." So Rahula, the son, did. And the Buddha then gave him a series of preliminary instructions for meditation. And then he taught him meditation on breathing. And he taught him the 16 steps of breathing. And these are steps that of practice that lead to a wonderful sense of well-being, joy and happiness and gladness. And I like to think that this is a very nice alternative to a teenager's pursuit of or concern with their own appearances. I think we know that teens can be quite concerned with outer appearances and all this. And so it's an external sort of source of validation or sense of well-being. But to be able to cultivate that validation and sense of well-being from the inside out, not dependent on conditions in the world and what other people think, is quite a powerful alternative to what's often a common pursuit among humans. And then he gave him the teachings on mindfulness of breathing, a series of instructions. And then he ends by saying, if you do this, it brings a lot of benefit, it brings much fruit in one's life. And if you do it, then your last breath, the ending of your last breath, will be known to you. So as you die, you'll know, you'll be present for the ceasing, use the word ceasing, of your last breath. And this is quite something that, a father tells his son, preparing him hopefully some point in the distant future for his own death, and saying, you should be prepared. Here's a nice way to be prepared so you can die peacefully, calmly, mindfully. And this is one of the results of mindfulness of breathing. So in that instructions to his son, he gave what's called the teachings on anapanasati. It's a Pali word. It means mindfulness of breathing in and breathing out. And there are 16 steps to this. And it's a wonderful series of instructions that can be approached many ways. Some people take it as a hard and fast technique. You start at step one and you just kind of master that and go 2, 3, all the way to 16. Some people find it doesn't work for them to have a kind of a linear technique that you follow. And for that purpose, it just works as a not a prescription of what to do, but a wonderful description of kind of the general trajectory in which meditation can go for many people if you really get into it. And so you kind of shows you the highlights, and then as you go through with deepening a practice, you have a sense of what to do and what to focus on so you can deepen further. Or some people take it as just to kind of understand what these 16 different options are for how to be present for your breathing. And then you sit down to meditate, depending on what arises for you, what happens in meditation, you have these 16 different tools that you can use given what's going on. And so, you can even do them backwards. You can do it any order at all, depending on what's going on. So there's many ways of practicing these 16 steps. But I want to first mention that it does follow kind of a natural order of unfolding, of deepening, relaxing, or a deepening intimacy with oneself. These four are divided into four categories, sometimes called tetrads. And they're correlated with the four foundations of mindfulness. So the first one has to do with the body, the second with feelings, the third with the mind, and the fourth with the deepening unfolding, a process of liberation. So when you first sit down to meditate, the coarsest, the most grossest, maybe that's the wrong word, coarsest, kind of most prominent experience that people can often have is their own body, their breathing, their physical experience, how they feel. You sit down after a busy day, your body feels tense and tired and achy or, something. And so you're kind of settling into your body first. And so there's kind of that's kind of the gateway to kind of settle in and be familiar with what's most obvious. As you settle down, then at some point what becomes prominent and what's a little more intimate is the world that's invisible to other people. So the body can be visible to others. It's kind of, more it's such a prominent thing. So someone can see if you're tense sometimes, your shoulders are up to your ears, and they can notice if you're relaxed. So you can kind of see aspects of the body. But the next stages are more, only you can know. So it's kind of more private, so it's more intimate. And that is, the first one is what's called feelings. And this has to do with the inner effect or deepening of practice as it unfolds. The consequences of getting relaxed and getting focused and concentrated. And then starting to be familiar with also what tends to be invisible to other people is your mental activity and what it feels like to be engaged in a lot of thinking or a lot of emoting or something. And then as we settle into that, and some of that gets kind of settled and relaxed, then the next tetrad is considered more intimate, more kind of close in, And that has to do with the quality of the of your mind itself, the mind state, the inner or the heart state, the quality of heart that's there. So it's not the particular ways in which you feel, which comes and goes. It's not particular ways of how your body is, but really an underlying kind of deeper attitude or state or mood of the mind or of the heart that's there. And once that gets settled and settles down and relaxes, and then we come into the fourth tetrad, which is where the real work of liberation is described. The movement towards the kind of insights that are liberating and the consequence of those insights leading to liberation. So this is a kind of a trajectory of deepening intimacy till we come down to where its most core operating principles that kind of sit at the juncture or at the heart of you know, who we are in some ways, where that gets transformed in a way that's, in Buddhism, is, relates to liberation and freedom. So that's one way of understanding these. These tetrads, the first tetrad begins with four sets of instructions, but to understand these instructions very simply, the foundational instructions for meditation having to do with the breath, and maybe for any meditation, involves three things to do. Three words, three actions. One is to know, to recognize what's happening. The second is to feel it, and the word in the text is to experience it. And the third is to relax. Recognize, feel, and relax. I think it's great. So first you have to sit down and just kind of take time to just discover what's here. Don't be in a hurry to change yourself, but first recognize, discover what's here. And sometimes it can take a long time to really get to know what's here for you, what your experience is. It's very respectful of yourself to take time to recognize what's happening. Once you recognize it's there, the cognitive knowing of what it is, then the instructions are to feel it, experience it. So don't just stay in your head in terms of recognizing and knowing, but allow yourself to drop into your body and the somatic experience, the felt sense of it. How does it feel? What is it like? The flavor, the texture, the sense of it in your body. And that's also a very powerful thing, to kind of drop out of your head and thinking a lot. And there's something very deep about opening up into your body. But Buddhism is very much about being embodied as much as it is about being mindful. And then once you're kind of taken time to feel it, and for some people, this takes a while because we always want to fix things and change things and judge things and have commentary. And so just to feel it in a very simple, relaxed way, then the next instruction is relax. So that's a beginning. The next tetrad, the knowing drops away. And maybe there's no need anymore to actively know what's happening. There's still a kind of a knowledge, kind of awareness of what's happening. But the cognitive recognition becomes less important, becomes simpler, because as you get more relaxed, it becomes simpler. And then the instructions are just to experience. To experience and then relax. So the first one was recognize, experience, relax. Second tetrad is experience. And then relax. Relaxing is great. So if you don't think that you're allowed to relax in meditation, the Buddha really stressed the importance of having physical and mental relaxation. The third tetrad starts with experiencing and then bringing yourself into a mental balance. Not too excited, not too calm, to kind of balance. And from there, you would graduate from just simply relaxing to a related movement, which is to liberate, to free the mind. Once the mind is in balance, focused, stable, some modicum of being liberated and being free of its distractions and preoccupations, then the mind is prepared for deeper insight. And the last tetrad, the instructions, the verb that's used for all four of the steps is to observe. So we're no longer experiencing, focusing on experiencing and sensing and feeling, and we're no longer trying to relax or liberate. We're just kind of sitting back and observing what's happening. But observing what's happening before you can do that in a stable, settled way is not so productive. So we have the earlier steps that lead us to a place where we can settle back and watch. So the 16 steps, you don't have to memorize this, but I'd like to go through them. Each instructions has a phrase, or part of the first part, which is the same. And that is, breathing in, and then the instructions. And then it says, breathing out, and then the instructions. So the very first instruction is, breathing in. One knows one is breathing in a long breath. Breathing out, one knows one is breathing out a long breath. Pretty simple, you know, deceptively simple, given that where we're going is full liberation. You know, people are in a hurry, they want to get onto it, you know, just like, what? No, it's, you know, long breath, you know. And how I understand this is that this is just getting to know your breathing, checking in, staying focused, and beginning to get intimate and connected to your breathing and recognizing how your breathing is, the different qualities, sensations that come into play, and beginning to stabilize your attention on your breathing. Because you'll see, if you start to be with your breathing, the mind will wander off a lot. So you come back and, you know, get curious and interested in, what is this breath like? With a little bit of settling, the breathing tends to stop being long, and at some point starts becoming short, not because it's held short, held tight, or restricted. It can be very relaxed, but because the breathing becomes more settled. So the second step is breathing in. One knows breathing in. When one breathes in a short breath, one knows one's breathing in a short breath. Breathing out, one a short breath, one knows one's breathing out a short breath. So just recognizing the change and settling that happens as we're doing breath meditation. And now, here the focus has been just on the breathing. And what happens next is that all the steps involve being with the breathing, being with the in-breath, being with the out-breath. So the breathing is kind of like the thread that runs through all the instructions. It's kind of like it keeps us centered, keeps us getting distracted, keeps us lubricated. Something about watching the rhythm of breathing that's very helpful for not getting tense, not getting distracted, and not getting reactive to what's going on. I call it the lubricant of the mind. It keeps the mind kind of soft and going. And so the idea is kind of like the thread that runs through our lives. Just keep going back to the breathing. If you're aware of your breathing, it's much more difficult to get lost in preoccupations. In fact, also, when we tend to get lost in preoccupations, if there's emotional concerns connected to it, then often the breathing gets held. But if you're present and aware of your breathing, you're much less likely to hold your breath. If you're not holding your breath, you're much less likely to get caught in your preoccupations, and you're much less likely to get tense. So it's a wonderful thing to kind of cultivate this commonality, this thread of staying with breathing. So the third step, the breathing is a commonality, is a common thread, but then we're using our peripheral awareness to monitor or track what else is going on when we're present. Like if you're driving a car, your primary attention is on the driving with focus what's ahead of you, but you're aware of the periphery. It's kind of important to be aware of what's going on peripherally. And you know, chances are that if you're driving along and you're really focused on driving and it's getting to be the early evening and getting dark, you will recognize it's getting dark and you'll turn on your lights. Or vice versa, in the early morning gets light and you recognize. So you have your primary focus on one thing, but you can be aware of something without a lot of effort in the periphery. So breathing in, one experiences one's body, one's whole body. And so as we settle in meditation on the breathing, after a while, the instructions are to pay attention to what's going on in your body. The peripheral attention, feel the body, the tensions, the holding patterns, the posture, how you are. And you do that for a while, and you might notice that you're tense. So then the next step is breathing in. One relaxes the bodily tensions. Breathing out, one relaxes the bodily tensions. And this is very helpful, because as we relax the tensions, the mind begins to relax, and it's a lot easier to begin to stay in the present moment, a lot easier to stay focused on the breath. A body that's very tense makes the mind, you know, it correlates with the mind that's jumping and not really focused. So relaxing. So the first tetrad is to focus, get to know your breathing with a peripheral awareness as you stay with the breath, become aware of your body, and then when the time is right, relax your body. This kind of relaxing into the body and relaxing into the present moment, at some point, as we do it well, it tends to create a sense of well-being. It kind of feels good. It feels nice to be settled, nice to be here, nice to be connected to your body in a relaxed way. And that sense of well-being can be mild and it can be quite strong. When it's strong, it tends to be called joy, when it has a certain kind of excitement to it. We're kind of like delighted and enjoying it. And then if the sense of kind of relishing it begins to settle, then the joy turns into something more sublime, which the Buddhism calls happiness, happy. So the next instructions are breathing in, one experiences joy. Breathing out, one experiences the joy that's there. Then, breathing in, one experiences happiness. Breathing out, one experiences happiness. Some people have an aversion to feeling joy and happiness, or feel like it's not spiritual. Some people are excessively preoccupied with being happy and joyful in meditation. It's good not to either push it away or to reach for it, but rather to, when it begins to happen, to allow for it and make space to feel it more fully. Feel it rather than getting excited about it. As we settle in, the joy and the sense of well-being supports the mind to get even more concentrated in the present moment. It feels good to be here. At some point, it's better to be here than thinking about your taxes or whatever it is you need to, you know, you're doing. So, like, why would you kind of not stay here where it feels so good and get involved in, you know, an argument with your boss or something? Just stay here. As we settle more and more into the present moment, then at some point we become aware of what's going on in our mind, our mental activity. Boy, I have a lot of chatter in there. I'm caught up in this discussion with my boss and whatever is going on. And so that starts the mental activity starts standing out in highlight. So the next step is breathing in. One experiences the mental activity. Breathing out, one experiences one's mental activity. Then the next step, breathing in, one relaxes the mental activity. Breathing in, one relaxes the mental activity. Breathing out, one relaxes the mental activity. So now you're beginning to relax the mind. And I call it sometimes relaxing the thinking muscle. If you're settled enough to really feel and sense what's going on in your mind, if you're really caught up in something or preoccupied, really thinking a lot, or really emoting a lot, involved very strongly in emotions, the tendency is that there's some kind of pressure or tension or hardness or buzzing or vibration. Something is energized in the system. I sometimes will feel it as a kind of a pressure or hardness in my, kind of behind my forehead, between my temples, somehow the area of the brain. And it feels tense in there. And so when I exhale, I'll relax that thinking muscle. Or kind of, sometimes I imagine that the mind kind of flattens out and spreads out like a really wide, flat, peaceful lake. So the instructions are to relax the mental activities. And this is very helpful because some people are so focused on what you're thinking, what they're thinking about, that prevents them from noticing the inner physical process of thinking as we're doing it. And if we can switch our focus from what we're thinking about to what it feels like to be thinking, then we have access to an ability to relax our thinking muscle. So breathing in, one relaxes the thinking muscle or the mental activity. Breathing out, one relaxes the mental activity. So once the mental activity starts to relax, then it's kind of like the if you're driving a car and the windshield is all dirty, but you don't know it, you know, it's gotten dirty slowly over the trip, you kind of get used to the dirty windshield. And then someone, you know, at a gas station cleans your window, and now, wow, you know, I hadn't realized. Why this. And now you're aware of, you know, you're bringing this sense of clarity in the window, the state of clarity that's there. As the mind quiets down and settles down and relaxes, then the mood or the state of the mind begins to stand out. You can feel clear, or you can sometimes you're aware of it being cloudy because it's, you know, difficult to see what's going on. Contracted if you're caught up in some concern. Expanded if you're more not caught by anything and the mind feels, awareness feels very large or big. There are different states of mind that can be there. One also can become aware that the mind is imbalanced. It's, you know, not enough energy, you're kind of drifting off into dullness, or you're too energetic, too active. So the idea is to bring the mind into balance. So the next two steps have to do partly with balance. So after knowing the mind, experiencing the mind, the instructions are to gladden the mind. It's a great word, gladden. Bring a sense of satisfaction or a sense of well-being or a sense of being pleased with what's happening. So recognize, this is good what's happening, but I think I'm getting kind of dull. So we need to, gladness is kind of a little bit more energy, bring energy into the practice. Some people talk about brightening the mind to bring it into balance. And the next step is breathing in. One settles the mind or concentrates the mind. And so if the mind is a little bit too active, then you want to relax the mind state, to have a little less energy there and make it settled, concentrated. So it's really here in a direct, simple, full way. So when the mind state becomes into balance, then it's much easier to notice what it's like when the mind is, in fact, caught by something, preoccupied by something. And some of the surface preoccupations, like the hindrances, desire, aversion, doubt, it's possible sometimes to let go of it. I don't need to think about what I'm supposed to have for dinner right now. My mind is in pretty good space, pretty nice, I'm settled. And then I lose touch with that settled, open, relaxed mind because I keep thinking about what I should have for dinner. I have desire, I want something really good. And so we liberate the mind from those kinds of preoccupations. Liberated from our angers, our resentments if we can. So we can really settle in further and really be here. Then we come into the last tetrad, which is to become to just sit back. We've done so much good work up until this point that at some point we stop doing. We stop trying to relax, we stop trying to experience more fully. But now the instructions are simply to sit back and observe. And there's four things that we observe in this last tetrad. The first is the key Buddhist insight that really supports the movement towards liberation. And that is to observe impermanence. Breathing in, one observes impermanence. Breathing out, one observes impermanence. And it isn't impermanence at the kind of conceptual level, thinking about, mountains get worn down and, you know, the days come and the nights come and they go. But it's when our mind is very, very settled and quiet, there's a moment-to-moment kind of recognition of how quickly experiences arise and pass in the field of awareness. And there's something about watching things come and go very fast that highlights where we congeal where we get stuck, where we get kind of create sense of self, get attached, where we don't allow the flow of change to move freely through us. And so, and we realize, oh, there I'm clinging there. That's clinging, that's congealing, and making something solid in this field of things just flowing. So we sit back and watch. But as we watch the impermanence and notice the congealing that happens with clinging or attachment, then the next step is to observe the fading away of our attachments, our clinging. Because if you're really centered and relaxed and present, and you're in the flow of things constantly changing, and it can feel the unsatisfactory nature of taking and congealing the impermanent flow and holding it tight and making it into a solid something. And so the movement towards being attached to wanting to be begins to fade away. And one begins to become more and more unattached, meaning no longer in the grip of clinging or attachments. So breathing in, one observes fading away of clinging. Breathing out, one observes fading away. What's nice about fading away, the word, the idea, is that there's no quick fix in Buddhism. Some people, you know, are looking for the enlightenment button, you know, or the button to turn off my thinking, or, you know, get rid of my clinging. It's like, what do I do here? I have to, you know, do this mental gymnastics and I'll discover this, you know, Big Bang theory of enlightenment. And, you know, and then I can be finished with this enlightenment thing and you know, just go on to other important things. So, but it's fading away. And then at some point, when things fade away far enough, there is an experience of cessation, where some of our clingings stop or drop or cease fully, at least temporarily. So breathing in, one observes the cessation of clinging. Breathing out, one observes the cessation of clinging. And this is the good news of Buddhism, that the ways in which we congeal, get caught up in clinging, is not hardwired into our minds and system. It can be released and come to an end. And to have an experience of oneself without any clinging is one of the most pristine and wonderful things a human being can experience. The sense of well-being, the sense of peace, the sense of compassion, the sense of, you know, it's sublime. It's just like some of the best things going, not to have any suffering in the system at all. And it's very educational to have that experience, because it gives us a very different perspective of the world of clinging than we could have had before that. People sometimes think, many people don't even know they're clinging, and if they do know, they think they have to, they're supposed to. Like, that's what's important. Like, you know, I'm supposed to get on in the world, and everyone else is clinging and ambitious and holding on to things in their life, and so I guess that's the name of the game. And and there's so much fear around not getting what we want or being safe or something that it can feel very frightening to feel like I can't let go of that, because then how will I take care of myself? But to have this full level of cessation of particular clingings or many clingings, and then to recognize how good this is, changes our relationship to the world of clinging. And that leads to the final step of these 16 steps. And that is breathing in, one observes relinquishment. Breathing out, one observes relinquishment. And relinquishment is a great word. And this is kind of part of the maturity or the wisdom of the practice. And that is that relinquishment is a decision or an aspiration that arises out of understanding, I'm done with that. I'm no longer interested in that. I'm sick and tired of doing that. So if you are constantly, you know, checking your emails, you know, like every 5 minutes or every time it bings, you know, check it. And if you wake up in the morning, the first thing you do is check your email, and the last thing you do before going to bed. And if you wake up in the middle of the night, you check your emails. And if in the course of giving a Dharma talk, you're checking your emails, you know, just like, you know. And if you get into this very deep, you know, deep, free, relaxed state, and it feels so good, and you start recognizing that, you know, it's not quite the pleasure of checking an email or the promise that it seems to offer, that ping that you should check. It actually does something not so good to the brain, to the mind. It actually, it's a loss of some kind of depth of intimacy. And you feel what it's like to no longer fully have that, fully kind of ceasing of that concern with email world. Then at some point you say, I think I'm done with clinging to email. I'll do it in a systematic way, I'll do it when it's appropriate, but I'm not going to be kind of living next to my phone all the time and checking it. I'm done. There's a relinquishment. Or I remember many years ago, most people in our scene don't smoke so much cigarettes anymore. Many years ago, I knew a man who was smoking cigarettes, and he came late at night, around 11 or 12 o'clock at night, and he ran out of cigarettes. So he had to have cigarettes. So he went to the store to get cigarettes. Easy enough. I don't think the store was that far away. But when he came home, and he said, "What am I doing? That I had to leave so late at night to get a cigarette." And he realized that he was being driven by his cigarette addiction. So he'd made a decision right then and there to relinquish cigarettes. So he was lucky. He could just, okay, I'm done. So this idea, there's something very maturing about saying, I'm done. Taking responsibility for our attachments or clingings, to recognize what we're doing, and taking some kind of make a choice or responsibility of, I relinquish. It doesn't mean that you can just then be done once and for all. It might come back because of the strong pull of our desires, attachments. But it's a sea change to no longer believe in the value of being attached to it. It's a sea change to make a decision, to the best of my ability, I'm no longer interested in this. So the movement towards liberation doesn't end with, you know, liberation. It ends with an understanding of what we're no longer interested in, what we're no longer going to be caught in. So this movement of when breathing in, one observes relinquishment. Breathing out, one observes relinquishment. And that can be quite deep. One of the, you know, very deep aspects of relinquishment is attachment to self, self-identity, self-concerns. And to experience the cessation of self-preoccupation in a very deep level in the mind, this peaceful, quiet place in the mind. And then come out of that and say, you know, this concern I had with wanting everyone to like me, or wanting everyone to see me in a certain way, or this concern about this preoccupation I have with my self-worth, negative worth, positive worth, you know, it's overrated. I think I'm done with that. I think I can relinquish it. So all along, one is breathing in and breathing out. And then in the peripheral awareness, when it's aware of the body, the mind, aware of impermanence, aware of fading away, aware of freedom, aware of relinquishment. And if you do that, the Buddha said, there's much benefit and much fruit. It leads to full liberation. It helps you to die peacefully. And it gives you really good instructions to give to your teenage kid. We'll see how I do on Saturday when we have the teen retreat. So I hope that was that review or that overview of the Buddha's teachings on breathing is interesting for you. It gives you a sense of what it's about, and maybe at some point you'll learn more about it. I spent a whole last two weeks teaching this at a retreat. So we hold 2 weeks to go through these 16 steps. So you can do it slowly over time. You got the speed version. Thank you.